Book 12, Chapter 2, Part 2. And first I will describe what belongs to the table. It was indeed in the king's mind to make this table vastly large in its dimensions. But then he gave orders that they should learn what was the magnitude of the table which was already at Jerusalem, and how large it was, and whether there was a possibility of making one larger than it. And when he was informed how large that was which was already there, and that nothing hindered but a larger might be made, he said that he was willing to have one made that should be 5 times as large as the present table. But his fear was that it might be then useless in their sacred ministrations by its too great largeness. For he desired that the gifts he presented them should not only be there for show, but should be useful also in their sacred ministrations. According to which reasoning, that the former table was made of so moderate a size for use, and not for want of gold, he resolved that he would not exceed the former table in largeness, but would make it exceed it in the variety and elegancy of its materials. And as he was sagacious in observing the nature of all things, and in having a just notion of what was new and surprising, and where there was no sculptures, he would invent such as were proper by his own skill, and would show them to the workmen. He commanded that such sculptures should now be made, and that those which were delineated should be most accurately formed by a constant regard to their delineation. When therefore the workmen had undertaken to make the table, they framed it in length 2 cubits and a half, in breadth 1 cubit, and in height 1 cubit and a half. And the entire structure of the work was of gold. They withal made a crown of a handbreadth round it, with wave work wreathed about it, and with an engraving which imitated a cord, and was admirably turned on its 3 parts. For as they were of a triangular figure, every angle had the same disposition of its sculptures, that when you turned them about, the very same form of them was turned about without any variation. Now that part of the crown work that was enclosed under the table had its sculptures very beautiful, but that part which went round on the outside was more elaborately adorned with most beautiful ornaments, because it was exposed to sight and to the view of the spectators, for which reason it was that both those sides which were extant above the rest were acute, and none of the angles, which we before told you were 3, appeared less than another when the table was turned about. Now into the cordwork thus turned were precious stones inserted, in rows parallel one to the other, enclosed in golden buttons, which had ouches in them. But the parts which were on the side of the crown and were exposed to the sight were adorned with a row of oval figures obliquely placed, of the most excellent sort of precious stones, which imitated rods laid close, and encompassed the table round about. But under these oval figures, thus engraven, the workmen had put a crown all round it, where the nature of all sorts of fruit was represented, insomuch that the bunches of grapes hung up. And when they had made the stones to represent all the kinds of fruit before mentioned, and that each in its proper color, they made them fast with gold round the whole table. The like disposition of the oval figures and of the engraved rods was framed under the crown, that the table might on each side show the same appearance of variety and elegancy of its ornaments, so that neither the position of the wave work nor of the crown might be different, although the table were turned on the other side, but that the prospect of the same artificial contrivances might be extended as far as the feet. For there was made a plate of gold 4 fingers broad, through the entire breadth of the table, into which they inserted the feet, and then fastened them to the table by buttons and buttonholes, at the place where the crown was situate, that so on what side soever of the table one should stand, it might exhibit the very same view of the exquisite workmanship, and of the vast expenses bestowed upon it. But upon the table itself they engraved a meander, inserting into it very valuable stones in the middle, like stars, of various colors, the carbuncle and the emerald, each of which sent out agreeable rays of light to the spectators. with such stones of other sorts also as were most curious and best esteemed, as being most precious in their kind. Hard by this meander a texture of network ran round it, the middle of which appeared like a rhombus, into which were inserted rock crystal and amber, which by the great resemblance of the appearance they made gave wonderful delight to those that saw them. The chapiters of the feet imitated the first buddings of lilies, while their leaves were bent and laid under the table, but so that the chives were seen standing upright within them. Their bases were made of a carbuncle, and the place at the bottom which rested on that carbuncle was one palm deep, and 8 fingers in breadth. Now they had engraven upon it, with a very fine tool, and with a great deal of pains, a branch of ivy and tendrils of the vine, sending forth clusters of grapes, that you would guess they were no wise different from real tendrils, for they were so very thin, and so very far extended at their extremities, that they were moved with the wind, and made one believe that they were the product of nature, and not the representation of art. They also made the entire workmanship of the table appear to be threefold, while the joints of the several parts were so united together as to be invisible, and the places where they joined could not be distinguished. Now the thickness of the table was not less than 1/2 cubit, so that this gift, by the king's great generosity, by the great value of the materials, and the variety of his exquisite structure, and the artificer's skill in imitating nature with graying tools, was at length brought to perfection, while the king was very desirous that though in largeness it were not to be different from that which was already dedicated to God, yet that in exquisite workmanship and the novelty of the contrivances, and in the splendor of its construction, it should far exceed it, and be more illustrious than that was. Now of the cisterns of gold there were 2, whose sculpture was of scale work, from its basis to its belt-like circle, with various sorts of stones encased in the spiral circles, next to which there was upon it a meander of 1 cubit in height. It was composed of stones of all sorts of colors. And next to this was the rodwork engraven, and next to that was a rhombus in a texture of network, drawn out to the brim of the basin, while small shields made of stones, beautiful in their kind, and of 4 fingers depth, filled up the middle parts. About the top of the basin were wreathed the leaves of lilies, and of the convolvulus, and the tendrils of vines in a circular manner. And this was the construction of the 2 cisterns of gold, each containing 2 firkins. But those which were of silver were much more bright and splendid than looking-glasses, and you might in them see the images that fell upon them more plainly than in the other. The king also ordered 30 vials, those of which the parts that were of gold and filled up with precious stones were shadowed over with the leaves of ivy and of vines, artificially engraven. And these were the vessels that were after an extraordinary manner brought to this perfection, partly by the skill of the workmen who were admirable in such fine work, but much more by the diligence and generosity of the king, who not only supplied the artificers abundantly and with great generosity with what they wanted, but he forbade public audiences for the time, and came and stood by the workmen and saw the whole operation. And this was the cause why the workmen were so accurate in their performance, because they had regard to the king, and to his great concern about the vessels, and so the more indefatigably kept close to the work. And these were what gifts were sent by Ptolemy to Jerusalem, and dedicated to God there. But when Eleazar the high priest had devoted them to God, and had paid due respect to those that brought them, and had given them presents to be carried to the king, he dismissed them. And when they were come to Alexandria, and Ptolemy heard that they were come, and that the 70 elders were come also, he presently sent for Andreas and Aristeus, his ambassadors, who came to him, and delivered him the epistle which they brought him from the high priest, and made answer to all the questions he put to them by word of mouth. He then made haste to meet the elders that came from Jerusalem for the interpretation of the laws. And he gave command that everybody who came on other occasions should be sent away, which was a thing surprising, and which he did not use to do. For those that were drawn thither upon such occasions used to come to him on the fifth day, but ambassadors at the month's end. But when he had sent those away, he waited for these that were sent by Eleazar. But as the old men came in with the presents which the high priest had given them to bring to the king, and with membranes upon which they had their laws written in golden letters, he put questions to them concerning those books. And when they had taken off the covers wherein they were wrapped up, they showed him the membranes. So the king stood admiring the thinness of those membranes, and the exactness of the junctures, which could not be perceived, so exactly were they connected with one another. And this he did for a considerable time. He then said that he returned them thanks for coming to him, and still greater thanks to him that sent them, and above all to that God whose laws they appeared to be. Then did the elders and those that were present with them cry out with one voice, and wished all happiness to the king, upon which he fell into tears by the violence of the pleasure he had, it being natural to men to afford the same indications in great joy that they do under sorrows. And when he had bid them deliver the books to those that were appointed to receive them, he saluted the men, and said that it was but just to discourse in the first place of the errand they were sent about, and then to address himself to themselves. He promised, however, that he would make this day on which they came to him remarkable and eminent every year through the whole course of his life. For their coming to him and the victory which he gained over Antigonus by sea proved to be on the very same day. He also gave orders that they should sup with him, and gave it in charge that they should have excellent lodgings provided for them in the upper part of the city. Now he that was appointed to take care of the reception of strangers, Nicanor by name, called for Dorotheus, whose duty it was to make provision for them, and bid him prepare for every one of them what should be requisite for their diet and way of living, which thing was ordered by the king after this manner. He took care that those that belonged to every city which did not use the same way of living, that all things should be prepared for them according to the custom of those that came to him, that being feasted according to the usual method of their own way of living, they might be the better pleased, and might not be uneasy at anything done to them from which they were naturally averse. And this was now done in the case of these men by Dorotheus, who was put into this office because of his great skill in such matters belonging to common life. For he took care of all such matters as concerned the reception of strangers, and appointed them double seats for them to sit on, according as the king had commanded him to do. For he had commanded that half of their seats should be set at his right hand, and the other half behind his table, and took care that no respect should be omitted that could be shown them. And when they were thus set down, he bid Dorotheus to minister to all those that were come to him from Judea, after the manner they used to be ministered to, for which cause he sent away their sacred heralds, and those that slew the sacrifices, and the rest that used to say grace, but called to one of those that were come to him, whose name was Eleazar, who was a priest, and desired him to say grace, who then stood in the midst of them and prayed that all prosperity might attend the king and those that were his subjects. Upon which an acclamation was made by the whole company with joy and a great noise, and when that was over, they fell to eating their supper and to the enjoyment of what was set before them. And at a little interval afterward, when the king thought a sufficient time had been interposed, he began to talk philosophically to them. And he asked every one of them a philosophical question, and such a one as might give light in those inquiries. And when they had explained all the problems that had been proposed by the king about every point, he was well pleased with their answers. This took up the 12 days in which they were treated, and he that pleases may learn the particular questions in that book of Aristeus, which he wrote on this very occasion. And while not the king only, but the philosopher Menedemus also admired them, and said that all things were governed by providence, and that it was probable that thence it was that such force or beauty was discovered in these men's words, they then left off asking any more such questions. But the king said that he had gained very great advantages by their coming, for that he had received this profit from them, that he had learned how he ought to rule his subjects. And he gave order that they should have every one 3 talents given them, and that those that were to conduct them to their lodging should do it. Accordingly, when 3 days were over, Demetrius took them, and went over the causeway 7 furlongs long. It was a bank in the sea to an island. And when they had gone over the bridge, he proceeded to the northern parts, and showed them where they should meet, which was in a house that was built near the shore, and was a quiet place, and fit for their discoursing together about their work. When he had brought them thither, he entreated them, now they had all things about them which they wanted for the interpretation of their law, that they would suffer nothing to interrupt them in their work. Accordingly, they made an accurate interpretation with great zeal and great pains, and this they continued to do till the 9th hour of the day, after which time they relaxed, and took care of their body, while their food was provided for them in great plenty. Besides, Dorotheus, at the king's command, brought them a great deal of what was provided for the king himself. But in the morning they came to the court and saluted Ptolemy, and then went away to their former place, where, when they had washed their hands and purified themselves, they betook themselves to the interpretation of the laws. Now when the law was transcribed, and the labor of interpretation was over, which came to its conclusion in 72 days, Demetrius gathered all the Jews together to the place where the laws were translated, and where the interpreters were, and read them over. The multitude did also approve of those elders that were the interpreters of the law. They withal commended Demetrius for his proposal, as the inventor of what was greatly for their happiness, and they desired that he would give leave to their rulers also to read the law. Moreover, they all, both the priest and the ancientest of the elders, and the principal men of their commonwealth, made it their request that since the interpretation was happily finished, it might continue in the state it now was, and might not be altered. And when they all commended that determination of theirs, they enjoined that if anyone observed either anything superfluous or anything omitted, that he would take a view of it again, and have it laid before them and corrected, which was a wise action of theirs, that when the thing was judged to have been well done, it might continue for ever. So the king rejoiced when he saw that his design of this nature was brought to perfection, to so great advantage. And he was chiefly delighted with hearing the laws read to him, and was astonished at the deep meaning and wisdom of the legislator. And he began to discourse with Demetrius, how it came to pass that when this legislation was so wonderful, no one, either of the poets or of the historians, had made mention of it. Demetrius made answer, that no one durst be so bold as to touch upon the description of these laws, because they were divine and venerable, and because some that had attempted it were afflicted by God. He also told him that Theopompus was desirous of writing somewhat about them, but was thereupon disturbed in his mind for above 30 days' time. And upon some intermission of his distemper, he appeased God by prayer, as suspecting that his madness proceeded from that cause. Nay, indeed, he further saw in a dream that his distemper befell him while he indulged too great a curiosity about divine matters, and was desirous of publishing them among common men. But when he left off that attempt, he recovered his understanding again. Moreover, he informed him of Theodectes, the tragic poet, concerning whom it was reported that when in a certain dramatic representation he was desirous to make mention of things that were contained in the sacred books, he was afflicted with a darkness in his eyes, and that upon his being conscious of the occasion of his distemper, and appeasing God by prayer, he was freed from that affliction. And when the king had received these books from Demetrius, as we have said already, he adored them, and gave order that great care should be taken of them, that they might remain uncorrupted. He also desired that the interpreters would come often to him out of Judea, and that both on account of the respects that he would pay them, and on account of the presents he would make them, for he said it was now but just to send them away, although if of their own accord they would come to him hereafter, they should obtain all that their own wisdom might justly require, and what his generosity was able to give them. So he then sent them away, and gave to every one of them 3 garments of the best sort, and 2 talents of gold, and a cup of the value of 1 talent, and the furniture of the room wherein they were feasted. And these were the things he presented to them. But by them he sent to Eleazar the high priest 10 beds with feet of silver, and the furniture to them belonging, and a cup of the value of 30 talents, and besides these 10 garments, and purple, and a very beautiful crown, and 100 pieces of the finest woven linen, as also vials and dishes and vessels for pouring, and 2 golden cisterns to be dedicated to God. He also desired him by an epistle that he would give these interpreters leave if any of them were desirous of coming to him, because he highly valued a conversation with men of such learning, and should be very willing to lay out his wealth upon such men. And this was what came to the Jews, and was much to their glory and honor, from Ptolemy Philadelphus.